to the Medical Minds podcast, Conversations with Guthrie Experts, where we explore the latest in healthcare with the incredible minds at Guthrie. I'm your host, Dr. Corinne Johnson, and today I'm thrilled to introduce a new voice to the podcast, someone you might recognize as a former guest, I think we'd say cough, cough, frostbite, earlier this year, who spoke about, as I said, frostbite. We're welcoming Dr. Katherine Lincoln, also known as Dr. Katie Lincoln, lovingly. Dr. Lincoln is a wound care specialist at Guthrie, bringing her expertise and unique perspective to our conversations. Welcome, Dr. Lincoln.
Dr. Johnson, thank you so much for having me to co-host. I'm really looking forward to this adventure together. And I'm looking forward to any feedback that the audience can give us of how to make this podcast something that they're really interested in tuning into every episode. So thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So today it is October, which is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and we're excited to have us join today Dr. Therese Fedorovich, a highly respected breast surgeon at Guthrie. Dr. Fedorovich has dedicated her career to advancing breast health and providing compassionate care to her patients, something near and dear to my heart. As I said, October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, so it's the perfect time to talk about prevention, treatment, and then the latest things we can do in breast health. So Dr. Fedorovich, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. Very excited to be here and talk to you ladies a little bit about breast health and all the exciting things that we have here going on.
Great.
So Dr. Fedorovich, you and I were just talking in the pre-recording about both being from the greater Binghamton area. Do you want to talk about just how you came into this wonderful specialty and how you serve the people you grew up with?
Sure. Born and raised in Endwell, New York. I did my medical school education up at SUNY Upstate, where as a medical student, I was really torn between going down the pathway of general surgery versus OBGYN. I've always had an interest in women's health. As I went through medical school and kind of weighed the things that made sense to me, I wound up kind of choosing the pathway of general surgery. But then as my career evolved, kind of ultimately wound up back in women's health. And so I've been over at the Lord's Breast Care Center for the past 3 years, kind of following in the footsteps of Dr. Janet Mewich, who recently retired. But it's been kind of a full circle, almost like a homecoming, right? This is my hometown. I care so deeply about this community and the people in this community. So really it's an honor and a privilege every day.
It is so important and so much when you're vested to a community that kind of helped raise you and how you can help keep them healthy. So let's talk a little bit about that. Let's start with the primary prevention for all physicians, the thing we really aim for. What does that look like in breast health?
So I think I take issue with the word prevention, because there's really nothing that prevents breast cancer. There are certainly things that we can do to modify risk and reduce risk, but I tell this every day because I think we have this inherent need to know why did my body grow this cancer? And I say the risk of developing breast cancer is having anatomic breasts. That's really all that you need in order to grow cancer. You can be the healthiest person in the world, perfect BMI, non-smoker, non-drinker, organic farm, vegetarian, vegan, exercising, you know, the picture of health, and you can still develop breast cancer. So I think replacing prevention with risk modification is something that I try to differentiate from. Even if you're healthy, even if you're making all the right lifestyle moves, you still need screening because it's still possible for that breast to develop cancer.
But you were talking about risk factors. And so you mentioned a healthy BMI. Tell me some other risk factors that really, you know, sort of bump that risk up that make you nervous when you're looking.
Sure. So certainly one of the first things that we're going to ask about is family history. And so certainly genetics play a role when I think of family history, it's not only shared genetics, but also shared environment, right? And shared lifestyle, eating the same kind of foods, drinking the same water, breathing the same air. So certainly family history plays a role. Obesity increases a woman's risk of breast cancer. Smoking and regular alcohol intake also increase risk of breast cancer. And then the remainder is really about hormone exposure. The breasts are hormonal organs. And so kind of different hormonal inputs can contribute to risk. So that means, you know, taking into consideration when women first got their period. How old were they when they got their first period? How old were they when they go through menopause? How old were they when they started having children? How many pregnancies? Breastfeeding is protective from a hormonal standpoint as far as the breasts go. And then the next thing that contributes to breast cancer risk is also kind of a hot topic these days, which is the density of the breast tissue. So density has nothing to do with how the breasts feel necessarily on a clinical breast exam. It's really about how the breast tissue looks on a mammogram. So the breasts are a combination of fatty tissue and then glandular breast tissue. And for every woman, there's going to be a different ratio between how much fattier tissue versus how much glandular tissue is in there. The greater the glandularity of the tissue, the less fat within that breast tissue is going to be contribute to density. So the denser the breast, the greater the risk of breast cancer as well. So those are the big driving factors. Other things we talk about are that can sometimes contribute is hormone replacement therapy. We haven't been able to suggest that there's necessarily a causal relationship between hormone replacement therapy and breast cancer, but certainly most breast cancers are hormonally driven. And so longer exposures to exogenous hormones are going to increase the risk of if there's something going on there, that's gonna feed that cancer and potentially cause it to grow. So those are the
big effects. So like with that, so all of this gets rolled into something that then gives recommendations for screening for patients. So what does that look like? I think that's something, you know, women hit their mid-30s, they start to think about because the number 40 always pings in their mind.
So I would recommend really all women ask their either primary care provider or gynecologist about conducting a risk assessment. It's essentially a tool that can be filled out even online by, you know, by just searching breast cancer risk assessment. We typically use the Tyrer-Cuzick risk assessment, but understanding that risk even as young as 25, because then that can help us to dictate, you know, is this a young woman that should be starting screening sooner? Is this someone in a higher risk category where maybe annual mammogram isn't enough, or maybe those mammograms start at 35 as opposed to 40? So risk is definitely, I think understanding your risk and understanding what that means as far as screening recommendations is really important.
You were talking about dense breasts. Does that change the screening? Does that change the testing that's done?
Yes. So denser breast tissue, it just makes the mammogram, it doesn't negate the need for a mammogram, but the mammogram alone is kind of incomplete as far as a screening model, only because with that denser tissue, there's small abnormalities that can hide within that dense tissue. And so annual screening is going to be a mammogram plus. Right. So whether it's a mammogram plus a screening ultrasound or a mammogram plus an annual MRI, that recommendation differs. There's not really a standard approach as to what is right. I think it differs by breast center. It differs by the radiologist reading the picture. In our office, women who have dense breast tissue and are otherwise high risk, whether that's by their calculated risk assessment or their potential genetics and family history. So dense plus high risk gets you an annual MRI for screening. Dense and average risk, typically we're screening those women supplemental with a screening ultrasound. So.
And if someone wants to have a mammogram, it's October. And so breast cancer, the hospital here is lit up pink for October. If someone has never had a mammogram and they're interested in just getting their first screening mammogram, no matter, you know, even if they're at an age where they may have, should have been screened already, and they're just ready to dip their toes in at this point, what is the way to access mammogram?
So it's really wonderful. You can self-refer for a mammogram. So you do not need an order from a physician. You don't have to go through your primary or your gynecologist. You give a call to the breast care center and we can get you set up for your screening.
And so, where are the breast centers around our areas?
So we're located on Riverside Drive in Binghamton. And we've got mammography here. We also have a facility over on Shippers Road in Vestal. Women can get their mammograms there. We also have a mobile mammography unit, which is a mammo van. And if you go onto the Guthrie website, you can see where the mammo van is planning to be. It helps us to serve some of those areas where there's lesser access. And so that's been a really awesome program. People can don't have to necessarily get in their car and drive half hour, 45 minutes in order to get their mammogram.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. And so as we walk through kind of the process for women, because I think this is a anxiety provoking process just from, you know, we all know someone or have heard a story. So we get that screening mammogram. And sometimes it comes back where we need more images. And I know as a primary care doctor, that's when I start getting the messages, like they think I have cancer, but it's very common to get called back for a second image, correct?
Absolutely. But it's always going to provoke some anxiety, right? Mm-hmm. Your image isn't perfect. We need to look at something a little bit differently. So our breast care center is trying to ease some of that anxiety. So anytime someone's got either what we call a BI-RADS zero, right? We need more pictures. Please come back and come in for either another mammogram or an ultrasound, or a BI-RADS three, which is another kind of gray area. Probably looks normal, but see us in a couple months and we're going to recheck. Our office is trying to capture those patients and bring them into the office, at least for a face-to-face conversation, a risk assessment to kind of show them what the pictures look at. This is what we were trying to take a better look at or a different look at, just to kind of ease some of that anxiety and also give the patient a little bit more information so that they can feel informed and also comfortable with how we're approaching the breast. Because absolutely, it's never a good day when you hear that your imaging isn't perfectly normal. But I always try to spin things in a very positive way, because the whole goal of screening is that if there is something abnormal, well, let's catch it when it's very early. Because if it's something that we need to worry about, better to find it early when, you know, the treatments and the overall survival is really, really great.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, that catching early, to your point of risk reduction, what can we do to make best state? So when do patients usually start to see you, you know, when you come into the picture and establish that relationship?
So typically patients are coming to see me when a biopsy is recommended, right? So if their pictures are such that, you know, there's something indeterminate, we need tissue to understand whether this is cancer or not, atypical or not. Usually that's when they're coming through my door. And so we walk them through that biopsy process. And we've got a wonderful team of nurse practitioners. So we kind of team approach the patient. And then if the biopsy comes back as something abnormal that needs to be addressed surgically, then you know me. We've met, we've talked through things. You kind of stay with me as we move forward through that diagnostic process and treatment. And then if it's benign, well, we've established you in the breast care center. We're going to keep an eye on this benign finding, and you follow up with the nurse practitioner team. So it's a very seamless, I think, very patient-centered approach.
And Dr. Fedorovich, do we have local places where you can get your breast cancer treatment, or do you have to go to one of the other cities hours from here?
No, we've got a great team here. Yeah. So our cancer center is pretty comprehensive. And so all the members of the treatment team that you can imagine, we've got locally in-house. So between surgery, the role of the medical oncologist, radiation oncologist, got a full team of navigators that help kind of connect the dots and advocate for the patients in between, access to physical therapists, nutritionists, dietitians, social work, because it's a complicated journey, right? And so, again, I think the priority is really patient-centeredness and making sure that these women have everything that they need in order to get through the treatment and without having to, you know, stay in a hotel or travel back and forth.
I think that's so important. And you don't realize 12 years ago, when I was in training in Washington, D.C., we didn't have a lot of breast centers. And so I had patients who had to travel and maybe their oncologist was at one place and their surgeon was in another place. And that really lengthens the time for care, right? And for outcomes. So the ability, I think breast centers are something maybe we don't talk about enough and how important they are for women's health in improving outcomes.
I agree. And I think, you know, of course, we hope that things, you know, go right down the timeline that they're supposed to. But I think especially when you don't know how to anticipate whether, you know, something's going to go very, very well, maybe there's complications, maybe there's follow up that needs to be had. And so all of that can be very challenging when you're having to get in the car and maybe not feeling well and have to go, you know, several hours to your treatment center. So we try to minimize that. We try to really advocate for our patients and make sure that they have everything that they need here at Lourdes.
It makes a primary care doctor jealous when all the concerns are getting taken care of at the breast center, right? We'll be here for emotional support.
Yeah.
But that's a good sign.
Dr. Fedorovich, Dr. Johnson and I were talking about being women physicians in medicine and that's a lifelong learning process. Mm-hmm. That every week we're learning something new. My kids are involved with competitive swimming and every week I'm learning something new. I didn't know about that. And so sometimes my reading involves, you know, some complaint that I saw from a patient, or sometimes I'm learning new things every week having to do with, you know, something that's fallen into my lap in the community. What are you learning this week? What's been new and interesting that you've been learning about?
Oh my God. You put me on the spot and it's only Monday.
There's no wrong answer here. I can go first. I reread What to Do with Oral Anticoagulants, Blood Thinners, when people have different dental procedures. So that was 5 minutes of my morning. So no wrong answer.
There you go. The hot topic has been, and I've seen this on a handful of the little blogs, is they're publishing how to approach menopausal symptoms in women who've had breast cancer. And so what options are available? Typically, it's always been if you've had breast cancer, you cannot have hormone replacement therapy. You will suffer through your symptoms. Otherwise, you will get cancer again. And I think it's just, again, turning the focus back on patient-centeredness. And so, you know, could there be a potential option for symptom management or short-term use risk, you know, monitoring for disease recurrence, certainly, but not necessarily just taking that off the table as an option forever.
Forever fascinated with medicine, that we live in this space where even though something becomes dogma, that if you've had breast cancer, you can never, we always can go back and revisit that and restudy it. And I'm forever fascinated with what we're able to do in medicine to just reconsider previous truths to see, is it really a hard truth or is there some risk modification, discussion with the patient, shared decision making? I think it's an incredible time to be in medicine.
Yeah, I agree. And I think a lot of it has to do with, again, like patient autonomy, right? They're grownups. We can present patients with the information as far as this would be the risk here. This is the risk that we accept. And then letting them have the autonomy to say, you know what, this is what makes most sense for me. I think that's huge.
Yeah. And sometimes that risk, I think, especially in maybe postmenopausal or perimenopausal symptoms with women, has been exaggerated, right? So that ability to say, no, this is really what your risk is. It's comparative to, you know, flying on an airplane. Or, you know, sometimes when we extend what that looks like, it allows us to really make choices for our quality of life. I think oftentimes medicine is quantity, 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 and we have to ask what's the quality associated with that. So it is a fun time.
I think menopause and menopausal symptoms affect women so variably, right? And so to kind of cover everything with a blanket statement, you can or can't do this, just doesn't make sense, because, you know, women's experience with those hormonal changes can be so different, and they can be really debilitating and life limiting. And so I think just having more of an individualized approach is really key.
Yeah. So in the spirit of Breast Cancer Awareness Month, for those of us that are listening that are just there, they can't do the mammogram. It's too anxiety provoking. We talked about, it's very easy to schedule. You can do it right online. There are multiple ways. I think there's going to be some walk-in campaigns, I'm sure, across the country during this month in multiple areas. What do we say? I mean, Dr. Lincoln and I have had mammograms. I don't know. I don't include you in that. But, you know, what do we say? It's okay. We can do this. We can get you through this. We have a caring team. You know, what other things would you add?
I mean, I would just say it's not so bad, right? I think as women, we endure far more uncomfortable procedures between a pelvic exam and a pap smear.
Childbirth.
You know, the value that comes out of the mammogram is so important, and it's uncomfortable, right? Mm-hmm. But there are, it's a very brief moment of discomfort. And so really the importance of it, you can do it. I have actually done it. And I think it's worth it, right? Don't be nervous. Go get your mammogram. It's not as bad as you think. It's not as bad as it was for your grandma who had to have the machine with the metal plates and the filming. The newer machines, I think, are a little bit more comfortable than that. And so I think the fear of discomfort should not deter women from getting their annual mammogram.
My experience, the techs have been so supportive. Mm-hmm. And if it's uncomfortable, they'll suggest to me different arm positions. And it really, like you're saying, from the time that you get your robe on and get in there, it's a matter of minutes. And the information that comes out of it is incredibly important. But those bedside techs have been just so caring and supportive to get me through any of those moments where I'm just a little nervous. You know, even as physicians, sometimes when we're on the patient side of it, we still are human. And I have always been grateful for those techs. They're seeing women patients that are very nervous about these exams day in and day out. And I'm grateful that they're there to take, you know, three more pictures and we'll be done, and really sort of give a countdown that this is going to, you know, you're in this testing suite just a few minutes and then go about your day.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Fedorovich, anything that you would like to add? I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Anything you'd like to add that we didn't talk about today? Topics you want to make sure our listeners hear?
I think I would just, emphasize the importance of the screening mammogram. Women come into my office all the time, worried about the mammogram. Well, I have dense breasts, they're not going to see anything. I always wind up having to get something else. Can't I just have the screening ultrasound? And the value of the mammogram doesn't go away just because the tissue is dense. It's valuable, but it's not complete, right? The mammogram is the only screening modality that's really going to pick up on those subtle changes or those subtle findings that could potentially tell us something is atypical or maybe a non-invasive cancer. the ultrasound and even the MRI doesn't do a great job of picking up those little microcalcifications that are sometimes that first sign that there might be something going on there. It's a safe exam. It's a really, really important exam. So I just can't understate the importance of the mammogram. And then the other thing that I always use this platform to, whenever I get a mic in front of me, I always say, you know, I think sometimes families can be a little bit hush hush about their medical history. Oh, I don't want to tell my children because I don't want to burden them with XYZ. But have conversations with your family, because it's really important to know about the health history of your family, ages at diagnoses, what kind of treatments were undertaken, because it informs your personal risk. And then, you know, decision making, whether that's maybe you qualify for genetic testing, maybe you get testing on behalf of your kids, all of those things are really important. So don't be afraid to have those conversations with your extended family.
Thank you.
Yeah. Great point, and one that you'll be rewarded for, right, when you come in with that information in primary care. So I think we're always our best advocate. So bringing that with us. Yeah. Well, wonderful. Well, thank you for joining us today. Yeah, absolutely. And maybe we've stumbled upon another topic, Dr. Lincoln. Perhaps menopausal symptoms is a conversation that would be well received. Well, Dr. Lincoln, some very good information today for ourselves and our listeners about the power of risk reduction that we own with ourselves, but then the ability of medicine and our compassionate providers across our network here at Guthrie to take you through your screening and processes should you have an abnormal screening. So we're thankful to Dr. Fedorovich for joining us today and certainly look forward to further conversations.
Thank you, Dr. Fedorovich, and thank you to our listeners for tuning in to this episode of Medical Minds Podcast, Conversations with Guthrie Experts. If you'd like to learn more about breast health or schedule a screening, visit Guthrie's website at guthrie.org/mammogram. Don't forget to subscribe to the Guthrie YouTube channel so you never miss an episode. Until next time, take care and stay healthy